Well, hello, Eastlake Church. I want to just welcome all of you here today. Those of you who are part of the Eastlake Network or you're watching online, we welcome you. To those of you sitting in the patio, we welcome you. To those of you on Facebook Live or who are watching some sort of hologram or virtual reality and all the crazy ways this church does church, we want to welcome you. Now, I have not done this in any of the other services, nor have I ever done this as a guest speaker, but I looked at this group and I said, they're so energetic. I want to get a selfie, and I'm not a big social media guy. But come on, guys, let's do it. Let's do it. I got to get out of this light. Ah! Oh, there we go. Okay, that's enough craziness. So my name's Dave, and there's not much really you need to know about me. There really isn't. I've been married to my wife, Rindy, for 22 years. We met in college. We have a family, two amazing kids, and another one. So that's all you really need to know there. We live in Kenosha, Wisconsin. If you've never been there or maybe never even heard of it, that's your loss. It is the tropical paradise of the Midwest. It just rivals San Diego in many ways. So plan your next vacation in Kenosha. My connection here at Eastlake is I was on staff here from 2003 to 2006. It happened to be the fastest growing season in this church's history. Ironic, I don't know, but it was truly a time in my life that changed me. And it was here at Eastlake that I truly learned about the grace of God. It was here at Eastlake that I learned about leadership in a new way and in a fresh way and was challenged and pushed and given opportunities. It was at Eastlake where I learned it is okay to not be okay. And so even as a pastor, I started becoming very, very comfortable talking about my weaknesses and my faults and my failures. I feel forever indebted to, at that time, Pastor Mike and Carmen, who took that risk on me as a young guy and just poured into me. And rumor has it that Pastor Mike is no longer the lead pastor. He's kind of transitioned from that. That should have happened about 10 years ago, but glad to know the church is moving on. And James Grogan, one of my best friends in the world, and the way James and I actually got to know each other is back in college we connected, and we used our summers to travel speaking at youth groups and churches and retreats. It was just an awesome time in our lives, and this is not a made-up story. In order to promote ourselves, to try to get opportunities, we had pictures of ourselves taken that, looking back, they're kind of like glamour shots. These are not photoshopped. Why didn't anybody step in and say no? And so I'm hoping maybe 5 to 10 years from now, we get the band back together and we start traveling. And I have an idea of what that photo will look like years from now. I think this is it. And so come on, America, here we go. We're ready. So here's the deal. We're going to jump right in. If you want, you could go ahead, take out the outline inside your program, and you can take notes. I hope I don't overwhelm you. Certainly going to be more content than you're used to. Here's the deal. We all are accustomed to either watching the news or seeing it go through our social media and just learning that every couple of days in our world, something dramatic unfolds that captures our attention, and the outcome is uncertain. Whether it's a soccer team trapped in a cave, or a hurricane that hits the East Coast, or it's a plane that we hear of that crashes. And as humans, it's always our natural instinct to hope against hope and to believe for a miracle and to pray and say, man, we want a good ending to this. Because we all love stories that end well, whether it's something we see in the news or it's a fairy tale or a movie. Right, we love it when at the end of the movie and after a long embrace with Elliot, E.T. gets back on the spaceship and heads for home. Right, we love it when Dorothy wakes up from her dream and she's surrounded by friends and family and she's no longer in Oz and she realizes that her life is still good. We love it when Nemo's dad returns on the long journey home with his little clownfish by his side. We love it when after 3 hours of atrocious acting and forced dialogue, the ship finally goes down and Leonardo freezes to death, right? There's this phrase we use in the English language that's just amazing. They lived happily ever after. And of course, that's not how we just hope fairy tales unfold or movies unfold. That's how all of us hope our lives unfold. And so from a very young age, we start to picture what our life idealistically would look like, what we want to do for a career, what we want to do for life, and how much money we want to accumulate, and kind of person we want to marry. In fact, when I was in elementary and middle school, my friends and I used to play a game on paper called MASH, Mansion, Apartment, Shack, and House. Anybody with me on this? Anybody? Wow. That's all of us into this guessing game, right? And of course, we'd put down the names of people we'd potentially like to marry. They were all celebrities. The kind of cars that we would like to drive, and they were all high-end cars. The kind of home we wanted to live in, that was where the mansion, apartment, shack, and house came in. Where we wanted to live in regards to location. I never put Wisconsin, but that's where I ended up, you know. And so we have these dreams. But even as a kid, we know, well, that's just fairy tale stuff. That's just idealistic. The truth is, as life unfolds, every one of us are confronted with the reality that life isn't always rainbows and unicorns and cotton candy. We live in a very broken world. And so the question that all of us have to face from time to time is, how do we maintain hope in a world that seems hopelessly broken? How do we maintain hope in a world that seems hopelessly broken? Now, I promise you, it's not all bad today, and it's not all Debbie Downer type of material. But come on, just think of some of the things we've seen unfold in the news in the last week or so. I mean, it's been a long time in which we watch controversies unfold on how people choose to protest and how people choose to share their opinions and beliefs. Right? It's bad news when we see catastrophic flooding hitting the East Coast. There's never-ending political battles. I mean, that's been going on well over 100 years. It just seems like it's just always bad news and controversy and people mad at each other. Matter of fact, I recently came across this article that says, fast food chain will no longer serve pot smokers. I'm guessing that's bad news for about 20% of the people at Eastlake Church. And so it just compounds on itself. But part of the reality of life is that we're going to face seasons and moments in our life where it feels like all hell is breaking loose and we're trying to maintain hope. And I'm guessing you might be able to relate to me when I say I'm prepared for days of disappointment and maybe even weeks of disappointment. But some of the things I've gone through in my life have lasted years, and I've learned I was not prepared for years of disappointment. Now, just so we're all on the same page, and for the purpose of this talk, here is how I want to define hope. Hope is wherever I place my confidence. Hope is wherever I place my confidence. It's whatever I look to, that person or that thing, for a source of stability. That can be in my education. That can be in a career. That can be in some talent that I have. That can be in a relationship that I'm a part of. And the thing about hope is all of us, we do this subconsciously. We place hope in people and in things, and we don't think about it. It's not really on our radar. The only time we ever think about hope is when we start to feel hopeless. And when we start to feel hopeless, we come to the realization that, hey, this person or this thing that I place my confidence in is not coming through for me. So what do you do when the foundation of your life starts to collapse underneath you? What do you do when you thought you were going to be married in your 30s, but now you're in your 40s and you're looking around and saying, man, I still haven't met that special person? What do you do when you thought you were going to retire at 65, but the economy has changed in your personal life and things have not gone how you felt. Now you realize you're going to be working into your 70s. What do you do when you thought my kids are about to leave the house? This is going to be the best years of my marriage, and now your marriage is falling apart. What do you do when you dreamed your entire life of having biological children, but now the doctors told you that's not going to happen? What do you do when all hell starts breaking loose? See, none of us even realize that we placed our hope in someone or something until the bottom starts to fall out. Now, one of the things I love about Eastlake Church, and it's one of the things I learned when I was on staff here, is that this is a church for everybody. So you don't have to be a follower of Jesus to be here. This is a safe place to be on your spiritual journey. Nobody expects anyone to be perfect. This is just like a process we're all in. And so I want you to know, regardless of where you're at today, you are welcome. But for just a brief moment here, I want to address those of you who are followers of Jesus. You've crossed that line of faith. You, as a follower of Jesus, ought to be the most hope-filled people on the planet. Because your hope and my hope is not in the economy, and it's not in a job, and it's not in a marriage, and it's not in a relationship, and it's not in what we achieve and accumulate and accomplish. Our hope is in, at least supposed to be, in God. This is why King David, second king of Israel, writes these words as a song of worship. He says, we put our hope in the Lord. He is our help and our shield. In him our hearts rejoice, for we trust in his holy name. And then I love how he concludes his thoughts. He says, let your unfailing love surround us, Lord, for our hope is in you alone. Now, as Americans, I think we would like to be able to get to the point, if we follow Jesus, to say, my hope is in God alone. But as Americans, come on, it's almost impossible to imagine that. Because from a young age, we're taught, well, if you just do the right things and you maintain your character and you work hard and you meet the right person and you marry the right person and you go to the right school and get the best education you can, you are going to be successful in life. And certainly, those are great things to do, and we need to pursue and work hard and do what we can. But at the end of the day, you can do all the right things and have your life still fall apart. This sounds really trite, but to put my hope in God means I don't know what the future holds, but I do know who holds the future. To put my hope in God says he can take the weaknesses and the struggles and the difficulties in my life and bring purpose out of them. To put my hope in God means that my failures are not fatal. God can use the failures in my life to grow me as a person. It means that my pain will not be wasted. It means I can go through a difficult season, and as unpredictable as it is, I can still say with confidence, God is with me. Now, what it doesn't mean is that everything's going to turn out happily ever after. A perfect example of this is the Apostle Paul. If you're not familiar with Paul, he is the most well-known leader in the history of the church, incredibly influential, incredibly disciplined as an individual. He prayed the way that we imagine we'd like to learn to pray someday. He studied Jewish scripture. He would write letters to churches in his area. He had so much influence in the first churches that were started. He would write letters. 13 of those letters ended up in our Bible. I mean, you talk about a guy who we just like would want to idolize and say, that's who we want to be like as a follower of Jesus. And yet you study his life, and Paul's had many, many seasons where things were falling apart. He had moments in his life that turned out tragic. I want to look at one of those moments today. And to kind of appreciate the story, we have to understand that the Apostle Paul was a Jew. And even though he had many Jewish friends, he also interacted with many individuals who were non-Jews. This caused his Jewish friends to wonder, where do you really stand? What do you really believe? Because there was a lot of division. Okay, we see that in our world today, where there's division between people and what they believe and where they stand on different issues. You can both claim to be follower of Jesus and still be very much at each other's throats because you see things differently. So that's what Paul was experiencing. It would get to the point that Paul would walk into communities and he would do some teaching and riots would break out because people wondered, again, where does Paul really stand in this? What does he really believe? And why does he believe that way? And on one occasion, he's in Jerusalem and he's speaking and a huge riot breaks out. And the authorities come and they see this riot and they don't know what's going on and they don't understand the backstory. So what they do is they arrest Paul because everybody's kind of pointing at him. And they put him into jail. Well, the legal system's messed up. And since the legal system's messed up, what should have been a day in jail while they figured things out and said, oh, I guess there's just controversy because of what he taught or what people thought he believed. He actually ends up in prison for 2 years. And it's in the second year of his imprisonment that finally he has a little bit of hope. It's decided he's going to be sent to Rome to stand trial. Well, it's November of AD 59. He's placed on a ship with a couple hundred other passengers. And they leave this port, which was about a 90-minute drive from Jerusalem. And he starts to sail for Rome. So picture this ship. It is not a Disney cruise. Right, this is not some leisure trip. This is Paul with a couple hundred prisoners. Early November is not the best time for sailing. Matter of fact, most ships have docked for the winter, but the sailor and the crew, they just kind of decided, we're going to make this happen, and so they leave for Rome. Well, sure enough, they're a couple weeks into their journey, and the weather gets overwhelming, and they find themselves in a very scary place. Here's what we read. When a light wind began blowing from the south, the sailors thought they could make it. So they pulled up anchor and sailed close to the shore of Crete. But the weather changed abruptly, and a wind of typhoon strength called a northeaster burst across the island and blew us out to sea. The sailors couldn't turn the ship into the wind, so they gave up and let it run before the gale. Okay, so here's what's happening. Apostle Paul and these prisoners are on the ship, and they're sailing close to the island of Crete. And as they're on this island of Crete, and they're headed toward Malta, this huge wind comes out of nowhere, right? The wind is just blowing and going, and all of a sudden this storm is happening, and everybody finds themselves in the midst of this storm, which leads me to this question. Have you ever found yourself in the midst of a storm? I have many times. I started the church I pastor at 33 years old, had big vision and crowds showing up and impact being made in our community and having a staff that always got along and everybody was hugging each other all the time, right? And it was just a fun atmosphere. God at work, and certainly a lot of that has happened. But there have been many, many times where the crowds didn't show up. There have been seasons where we didn't know how we were going to pay the bills in the coming weeks. Nobody told me that in year 5 of our church, even as we were moving forward and tons of people were showing up, that I'd be hit with such a bout of depression that there would be weeks that I would call into our tech team and say, play a teaching video. I can't make it today. I've experienced many storms. I have experienced storms in my parenting. Because like you, when my kids came into this world, and I thought, this is like the greatest thing ever. I'm super proud to be a parent. Like, I'm going to be father of the year. I'm going to be the greatest dad ever. And I'll still buy myself t-shirts like that from time to time as a reminder, right? I thought every time I walk through the doors, my kids are going to be like, Dad, we're so glad you're home. And I've had many great moments with my kids. But nobody told me that when my daughter Alyssa was 14 years old, 4 years ago, that she would be overcome with anxiety and overcome with depression to such a point that she would stop going to school and there was nothing I could do to get her to go. And so I had eventually had to bring her to a program 8 hours away from where we live, this program in Nashville, and we'd have to leave our 14-year-old baby there while she gets the help she needs. Nobody told me that for the last 3.5, 4 years, she wouldn't even be living with our family. Felt like a failure as a parent. Felt like, what is wrong with me? I've gone through many storms. Nobody told me of how the pressures of the church would always be ongoing. Last year was the most difficult year in our church's history. We were just at the 8-year mark and moving into our 9th year, and we had portable facilities. And so our Kenosha campus, which is our largest campus, we were running 1,800 people meeting in a movie theater. I mean, it was awesome. And then the movie theater says, hey, we're going to do a big remodel. You guys have to move. And we couldn't find a place that we could meet permanently. And so we moved 6 times in 1 year, our entire campus. We lost hundreds of people. Financially, our situation seemed to change overnight. It was just a very difficult year. And then one of our top leaders resigned and decided to go on staff at another church. And it was so crushing. And it started to send me into this idea of, I'm such a loser. I started to use that line with one of my best friends there at the church. I says, I feel like a loser pastor. He'd say, yeah, you can't talk about like that. But that's how I felt. And it started to bring so much stress on me that it impacted my marriage. Started going to weekly marriage therapy. But eventually my wife said, this isn't enough. We need to get serious help. And so we flew out to Florida and spent a week in intense marriage counseling. Mainly because of her, but that's a side note. But nobody told me that that would happen as I'm trying to serve and follow Jesus. I've experienced storms. The biggest storm that I ever encountered started on April 14th, 2008. That's when a group of Marines wearing their dress blues showed up to my parents' house and rang the doorbell. And my mom, as she's walking to the door, looking outside the picture window, sees these Marines standing there, and she starts to lose it. And she starts to become overwhelmed, and she could not get herself to go to the door because of some assumption she created in her mind. And she started to yell for my dad. And when he came up and saw what was unfolding, he says, we're not going to assume anything. But sure enough, as they opened the door, they were told that my brother Ricky, who had been serving in Iraq, would be coming home in a body bag. just 1 week shy of his first wedding anniversary. That event launched our entire family into a storm like none other. So I have my storms, but I know this, you have yours. So what do? When you're in the midst of a storm, how do you maintain hope in God? Well, what we're going to do is look at some lessons that we can pull out from Paul and these prisoners being in the midst of the storm. And if you're not a follower of Jesus, this is so good, the stuff we're going to look at, because it's so practical. This ought to give you some understanding of why people gather like this week after week at East Lake Church, because you start to realize, man, as a follower of Jesus, there are some just very practical things that help me in life. God is a helper. I may not agree with everything they teach and I may not believe everything, but man, I understand. If you are a follower of Jesus, it is imperative that you live these out as we strive to being the most hope-filled people on the planet. What do you do when you're in the midst of a storm? Number one, you stay put. In the midst of the storm, the temptation is, well, let's just jump ship. As ridiculous as that sounds, right? That's what we do. We run to unhealthy relationships. We run to alcohol. We run to social media and just vomit our feelings to everybody. We run to different outbursts of anger. But often the wisest thing we can do is just stay on the ship. Now to give you a little context of what's happening in this story, the storm is unfolding between the islands of Crete and Malta. Okay, so halfway between these two islands, you've got this storm brewing. And while that storm is unfolding, here's what we read. Then the sailors tried to abandon the ship. They lowered the lifeboat as though they were going to put out anchors from the front of the ship. This is awesome. They're lowering down a lifeboat because they're going to escape because the ship is in so much danger, but they're pretending it's anchors. Hey, everybody, don't look. We're just putting down anchors. Well, they're really putting down a lifeboat. They're pretending. And when we're in the midst of a storm, it's just so easy to want to pretend. Right? Our whole life, it's all about image. Social media is about image. What our house looks like, the kind of cars we drive, image, image, image. Right, one of the unhealthy things that I've done in our marriage over 22 years, and I promise I'm getting better, is often I give my wife a very short notice of when people are coming over. Hey, I forgot to tell you, got 17 people coming over in an hour. She's like, what? It's a pretty regular occurrence, right? So she's learned to deal with it. But there have been times where I've just given her a few minute notes. It doesn't matter. It could be James and Becky Grogan. I'd be like, hey, babe, just calling to say hi. You'll never believe it. James and Becky are in town. They want to surprise us. And she'll be like, oh, that's awesome. Are you guys coming over? Yeah, babe. All right, Dave, just give me an hour. Just give me 2 hours. Can you? Hey, babe, yep, we're on our way right now. Oh, they're excited to see you too. No, Dave, not now. Okay, well, we'll see you in 3 minutes. Yep. And of course, what's happening on the other line? She's going into full-on panic mode. She's turning our house into a military. She's getting our kids together. You get this over here. You throw that away. Take these out. Put them in the oven. I don't care. Go, go, go. Let's get ready. And then the doorbell rings 3 minutes later. It's me knowing I'm in trouble, but I got my friends with me. And she opens the door and she's standing there in her apron with a big smile. Her makeup's done. She's got cookies in the oven, right, along with the socks. She's got candles burning. And it's like, huh? And you know, it's like people, your wife wears an apron. Wow, so old school. What is going on? I'm like so proud. Oh, yeah. But it's all fake, right? And you see this. You see this on social media. People put about how amazing their lives are. But when you get into it, it's so easy to pretend. We don't want people to see what's really going on. And so the captain of the ship and the crew, they're faking it. They're putting down a lifeboat. They're about to escape. They're just pretending. We read this, but Paul said to the commanding officer and the soldiers, you will all die unless the sailors stay on board. He says, I get this sense from the God that I serve that we need to all stay put. Don't pretend, don't abandon ship. So we read that the soldiers cut the ropes to the lifeboat and let it drift away. When you're in a storm, the temptation is to panic, it's to stress out because you're already overwhelmed. It's to run to unhealthy things, but the best thing you can do is just stay faithful. One of the biggest challenges when I lost my brother was for our family to just continue doing our regular routines. Because the temptation is, well, I'm just going to stop hanging out with people for a while and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to get out of my regular routines. I normally work out on a regular basis. I'm not going to do that anymore. Or I normally have a time of prayer. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go to church, because if I show up to environments like this, everybody's going to surround me and always be asking about Ricky. And it's just, it's tempting to break free from that. But one of the best pieces of advice that all of us received individually is keep as many normal routines in your life as possible. Stay put. The second lesson we learn in the midst of the storm is it's important to take care of yourself. Right, for most of the journey that Paul and these prisoners have been on, it's just been unpredictable weather, and they've been sick to their stomach. They haven't been eating. And so Paul calls it out. We read, just as the day was dawning, Paul urged everyone to eat. You've been so worried that you haven't touched food for 2 weeks, he said. Please eat something now for your own good, for not a hair of your heads will perish. He says, I get this sense from God that we're going to be okay, but you just got to eat. You know, when you're going through a storm, the temptation is to not take care of yourself physically, to stop taking care of yourself emotionally and relationally, spiritually. It's hard to remain hopeful, but you got to take care of yourself. Going back to the loss of my brother, when Ricky was killed, I learned that everybody in our family grieved differently. But in the midst of that, we learned it is important to stay healthy and to take care of ourselves. And so people would really push and challenge us. I think of my parents. My mom, who you see behind these guys in their dress blues, initially, she spent the time after Ricky's death just staying busy and working and cooking and cleaning. And people would say, Susan, you gotta stop. And she'd just say, I just gotta stay busy. I gotta stay busy. I can't focus right now. And that was okay for a little bit. But thankfully, she had people in her life that said, you need to get into grief counseling. And so she did that, and she went that route. My dad, he withdrew from everybody for a long time, would kind of go into his office at home and often lock himself in there. But eventually he knew, I've got to take care of myself. And so he'd start hanging out again with his friends and doing the things that were healthy. And I had to learn how to just stop being so obsessed. I would always be working on some website for Ricky, or I'd be reading articles because there were so many articles that had come out when this happened. And I just had to get away from that. In the midst of the storm, we have to find ways to take care of ourselves. A third thing that we have to do in the midst of the storm is we have to learn to give thanks. See, anybody can honor God when things are going good, right? When you get to the end of the day and you're like, today was a great day, right? My team won. As a Green Bay Packers fan, that's a very regular occurrence. We're always having great seasons, right? And so you get to the end of the day and you're like, man, today was amazing. I showed up to a church service. They had some guest speaker. Man, that was more eye candy than we've been used to in a very long time. Oh, God, you are good. Right? You say, man, my day's wrinkle-free and pain-free. I got the promotion. I got my car washed and no birdie put doo-doo on it again. It just, this is so good. I get it. But man, when you are not having a good day and it feels like your life is falling apart and they tell you your team is moving from your city to another city and they tell you that, hey, you're not getting the promotion you thought you were going to get. It's easy to be overwhelmed with disappointment. But going back to the prayer of King David, this is where we need to learn to put our hope in God. To say, God, I believe you're faithful regardless of what's happening in me. So after encouraging the passengers and crew to eat, we read this. Then Paul took some bread, gave thanks to God before them all, and broke off a piece and ate it. Then everyone was encouraged and began to eat, all 276 of us who were on board. So in the midst of the storm, Paul's saying, we need to give thanks to God. We need to remember that he's the one who sustains us, and he's refocusing everybody. What a great discipline. Over the past 10 years, as our family gets together at holidays, we always remember Ricky, and there are certainly days that we get choked up and it's emotional, but many of the holidays, not just Memorial Day, we'll start talking about Rick and we'll share the great memories and stories. And we don't think about the loss, we think about what we had. So important. So important. As I mentioned, the last year and a half, 2 years of our church's history has been crushing at times. It got to the point where I genuinely believed I was not the right guy to be pastoring this. So I called up Pastor Mike and Carmen, and I would talk to Mike. And I just said, Mike, I just don't think I'm the guy. I'm so overwhelmed. And him and Carmen flew out this summer and spent some time with Randy and I. And he said to me, are you seeing what I'm seeing? He said, Dave, I'm being serious. Like, what don't you see? said, yeah, you're down a few hundred people from a year, year and a half ago. He goes, but look at how many people are showing up. Look at the energy in this church. He said, yes, you moved six times in a year, but now you have two permanent facilities. He said, Dave, you've got a staff. You're moving forward. He says, what am I looking at and not seeing that you're looking at? And it started to dawn on me. I've been focusing on this 10% of negativity and things that have crushed me. 90% of my life is so good. There's so many friends. There's family members. There's we've got a health. There's just so many good things. But I got focused on that 10%. So even as you hear the last 10 years of my life, you could feel like, Dave, your life's been all hell. No, 10% of it's been hell. There's so much good. And so I redirected my thoughts and my attention onto God and saying, man, God, I am grateful for what you have done. There's something about thanking God in the midst of a storm that keeps us encouraged. And then number four, we have to learn in the midst of the storm to hold on to whatever we have to hold on to. So the storm is raging. They start to get close to the island of Malta where they know that they have to dock. They know the ship's about to run aground soon, and so they start to put down the anchors. As they do, here's what we read. But they hit a shoal. Okay, that's a shallow part of the ground. And the ship ran aground too soon. The bow of the ship struck fast, while the stern was repeatedly smashed by the force of the waves and began to break apart. So all of a sudden, the crew is finding themselves in a very terrifying situation. Disaster is imminent. And so everybody's afraid because they're thinking, well, we're going to lose our lives. Well, the soldiers are really afraid because they're like, the prisoners are going to escape. That makes sense, right? When there's natural disasters in our world, there are times prisoners will take advantage of that. In fact, in Haiti in 2010, there were 4,000 prisoners who escaped when the earthquake hit. And so this is a very legit concern. Here's what we read. The soldiers wanted to kill the prisoners to make sure they didn't swim ashore and escape. But the commanding officer wanted to spare Paul, so he didn't let them carry out their plan. Then he ordered all who could swim to jump overboard first and make for land. The others held onto planks or debris from the broken ship, so everyone escaped safely to shore. The ship's falling apart, and everybody just starts holding on to whatever pieces of wood or debris that they can find. When you're in the midst of the storm, the best thing you can do is find whatever you can to hold on to. I've been holding on to the words of Mike and Carmen from earlier this summer. Some of you, it's just a word of encouragement. It's a note. It's a text you receive that you just need to save. Maybe for you, it's just staying committed to your group of friends. Eastlake has an unlimited, it feels like, a number of groups that you can participate in. It's just saying, I'm just going to stay faithful. I'm going to feel like I don't want to be around anybody, but I'm going to get around people. Maybe it's a habit you've had in your life, but in the time of the storm, you feel like just walking away from this healthy habit. And you just need to be engaged in that. It may feel like the ship of your life is falling apart, but if you hold on to the broken pieces, I'm telling you, you can get to your destination. I love what the author of Hebrews writes when he says, for God has said, I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. So we can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper, so I will have no fear. You can trust God. You can have hope in him. Hope that he'll take the broken pieces and bring purpose out of them. Hope that the failures in your life are not fatal. Hope that even though you can't see the big picture, there is someone who does see the big picture, who can take the broken dots of your life and somehow connect the pieces. So placing our hope in God doesn't mean a big fake smile. God is good all the time. I'm never sad. I'm always hopeful, right? It doesn't mean that. It just means that when it feels like all hell is breaking loose, I can have hope because God is with me. And that's what following Jesus is all about. We have a hope that's rooted in who God is. And so today, I'm not bitter at God for the last 10 years of my life. I'm not discouraged. I'm overwhelmed at times, but I'm staying the course because I've seen the faithfulness of God and I am following him with all of my heart. So in just a moment, the band is gonna lead us, or they're actually gonna play a song and we're gonna use it as a time of reflection. And what I'd just like to encourage you to do is figure out in your life, in this season, what your next step is. Maybe you feel like you're not in a storm, so you gotta help someone who is. So what does God need to give you the strength to do today? Is it to stay put? Is it to take care of yourself? Is it to give thanks? Is it to hold on to whatever you have to hold on to because you haven't seen anything? And you say, well, I honestly can't figure out what I'm supposed to do. Then maybe you need to get some professional help of someone who can guide you and steer you, because it is okay to not be okay. Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, we pray today that whatever storm is taking place in the lives represented here, a parenting storm, marriage storm, relational storm, financial storm, mental health storm, that you would give us wisdom to know what we're supposed to do in this season. Encourage to do it. In Jesus' name, amen.